Welcome to episode of How to Become a Top Teacher. I'm James, and
I'm Lisa. Excited for today's topic because it's something teachers can really sink their teeth into. We're talking about behaviorism in the classroom. Such a practical and often misunderstood approach, don't you think?
Absolutely. Behaviorism sometimes gets a bad rap for being too focused on drills and rote learning, but when used thoughtfully, it's actually a fantastic tool for building precision, fluency, and confidence in students.
Right, and it's especially useful for teaching skills that need to be automatic, like math facts, phonics, or even classroom routines. So today, we're going to unpack how behaviorist strategies work, when and how to use them, and how they fit into a broader teaching framework.
Perfect. Let's start with a quick definition. Behaviorism is all about learning through repetition, reinforcement, and feedback. It's grounded in the idea that practice helps strengthen neural connections in the brain, which is backed up by neuroscience.
Exactly. Repetition literally reorganizes the brain by forming and stabilizing synapses. So when students repeatedly practice a skill in a targeted way, they're building the brain's muscle memory, so to speak.
And that's why behaviorist practices are often called the scaffolding stage of learning. They help students get to a point where they can move on to more complex, constructivist tasks like problem solving and critical thinking.
Yes, but it's not just about repetition. Clear modeling is another key element. For example, the I do, we do, you do framework works brilliantly. The teacher models a skill first, step by step, while thinking aloud. Then they guide the class through it together, and finally, students practice independently.
That's such a powerful strategy. I recently saw a teacher using it for multiplication fluency. She started by modeling how to multiply 6 by 7 by doubling 6 by 3. Then, the class practiced as a group using mini whiteboards, and finally, they worked individually on a time drill.
Oh, I love that example. And during independent practice, immediate feedback is crucial. If a student made a mistake, the teacher could say something like, "You set up the equation correctly, but you forgot to divide both sides by 3. Try that step again."
Right. That kind of specific, timely feedback ensures students don't practice errors, which speeds up their habit formation. It's like correcting your form in the gym. You don't want to keep lifting weights the wrong way.
Exactly. Another thing behaviorism does well is reinforcement. But this has to be done thoughtfully. For instance, a small sticker chart or mastery certificate can be motivating, but overusing rewards might backfire and reduce intrinsic motivation.
Good point. Ideally, reinforcement should focus on effort and mastery. For example, saying, "I can see you practice those math facts. Your speed has really improved." That builds confidence without creating over-reliance on external rewards.
And speaking of confidence, shaping and chaining are great for breaking down complex tasks into smaller, manageable steps. Like teaching a lab procedure, you might start with pipetting, then move to measuring, and finally combine all the steps together.
Absolutely. And don't forget prompt fading. At first, you might give a lot of cues, like pointing to a visual reminder, but over time, you gradually reduce those prompts until students can perform independently.
Yes. And that ties in with mastery learning, where students only move on once they demonstrate a clear level of proficiency. It's all about giving them the extra practice and support they need to succeed.
So, Lisa, when do you think behaviorist techniques are particularly useful?
Well, they're perfect for procedural skills, like learning a math algorithm or lab safety. They're also great for building fluency in tasks like reading accuracy or typing speed. And they're essential for safety-critical tasks, like operating machinery or following lab protocols.
I'd add classroom routines to that list. Teaching students how to enter class, submit work, or transition between activities, those are all things behaviorism can help with.
Definitely. And here's the thing, behaviorism isn't the end goal. Once students have built fluency, you can transition to constructivist strategies. For example, after mastering multiplication, you might give them word problems that require critical thinking and application.
Exactly. It's about using behaviorism to build the foundation, then layering on deeper, more contextual learning. That way, you're combining the best of both worlds, precision and flexibility.
And that's why it's so important to avoid common pitfalls. Overemphasizing rote memorization, for instance, can limit understanding. Instead, pair drills with explanations or varied tasks to promote deeper learning.
And let's not forget feedback. If it's too vague, like just saying, "good job," students don't know what they did right or how to improve. Feedback should always be specific and actionable.
And we can't ignore the emotional side of learning. Building a safe, respectful classroom environment is essential because a student's self-esteem and background can influence how they respond to feedback and reinforcement.
Such an important point. Before we wrap up, let's give teachers a quick checklist for using behaviorist practices effectively. What do you think?
Great idea. Before a lesson, set clear objectives and check prior knowledge. During practice, provide immediate, corrective feedback and monitor student progress. And after the lesson, use a quick formative assessment and schedule spaced review sessions.
Perfect. So, the takeaway here is that behaviorism is a powerful, pragmatic tool for building reliable skills, but it works best when integrated into a broader teaching approach. Use it to build the base, then transition to strategies that promote flexible, meaningful competence.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks for joining us today, everyone. We hope you found this discussion helpful, and as always, feel free to share your thoughts or questions with us. Until next topic, happy teaching!